Hello, everybody. Welcome to 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back. How is that for the correct name of the podcast I'm introducing? This is Connor Lestoka. This is the Bad Book Club. We read books that we're probably not going to like. And as always,
hey, Connor,
Mike is with me. Yeah.
Connor?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm sorry to... This is, I know, unprecedented. I just want to break in here. Look, I can't do it anymore, man.
Can't do what?
You know, the thing where we do this podcast and then we read a book and then we talk about it and it's a book that we're not going to like.
Right. That's the conceit here.
Yes. That's what we've always said. Yeah, I really don't like this book, so I'm just not going to do it.
Well,
in fact, I didn't do it. But fear not. No, there's going to be a podcast.
Is there?
Yes, there is. Well, first of all, you read it. So even if
I did, it's like a, you know, a commitment we made.
Yeah. Well, I'm not shirking it. That's why that's why I broke in. I did not read it. However,
big, however,
that's a good one though. I did pay, paid my niece, Caitlin, who is here, and Caitlin read it for me. Gave her $150. Well, let's not get into financials on this.
Out of our like shared fund for the like.
No, out of yours. I didn't have any in my account, so I just went into yours and got it. But it's going to be worth it because Caitlin, say hi. This is Connor Lestoka, and this is Caitlin, my niece.
Hi, Uncle Mike. Hi, Connor. It's Connor. I thought it was Connor.
No.
I never, ever heard you say it before. Hi.
Hi, Caitlin. She'd never heard anyone say the name Connor before?
Well,
you only have one N.
I mean, the last name often confuses people. We're off to a bad start, Caitlin.
Lestoka. No, my dad's my uncle's Polish. Not this uncle, different uncle from the other side. But I know, but you'll just have one N. But anyway, okay, it's so random. I'm sorry.
But anyway, Caitlin read the book, and so I am going to duck out, and so have a good podcast. Caitlin read the 50 pages, and she is averse in everything thorny and willowy, so have at it, and good luck. I will listen to the podcast. I'm not going to listen to the podcast, but I'll see you next episode, or you'll see Caitlin. So long, guys, and have a good podcast.
Okay, bye, Uncle Mike. Okay, my mom says thanks for the pickled eggs. She doesn't know what to do with them, so...
All right.
Just call.
I will. I'll give her a call. Bye-bye.
Wow. Well, yeah. I mean.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You feeling okay?
I'm okay. I had my wisdom teeth pulled out, and so that's why my mom said I should just do this for Uncle Mike, and so I'm fine.
Like how recently?
Oh, just a couple days. Like, yeah, like not yesterday, but the day before.
Good Lord. Are you still bleeding?
A little bit. It's kind of dry when I suck in, you know.
Okay. If we can keep it to a minimum, I think we'll be able to get through this. All right. Well, nice to meet you, Caitlin.
Hi, Connor.
I'm sorry that you had to be roped into this, but I mean, how old are you?
Well, I'm 20, but okay. I mean, I sometimes can go and drink legally. I'm 20.
Well, sure. I wasn't asking you out to for drinks or anything. Okay. But yeah, just $150 goes a lot longer when you're younger. So, all right, let's get started. We have all our usual departments. We're going to do some. I'll quiz you on fanfic or real later. That's where we read fanfic and you try to guess if it's fanfic or actually from the book. We've got emails and we've got dumb sentences of the week. But if you're okay, we can just start stuff at chapter 11 where we left off. Sound good?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. So we started off like the last thing we heard was that they needed to get to a boat, and so we kick in end media res. Morag is not happy. Morag is not happy. There'd been no wind on the bayside of the peninsula central spine. So I went back. I'm sure like you did too. I looked back about the bay. What do we know about the bay? Well, it was a deep cut.
I kind of skimmed over that.
Okay. It was a deep cut from like chapter two. It said a bay, the bay was considered by many a small sea in its own right. So we're back at that body of water. And I'm sure you were concerned, if you didn't remember that there might,
yeah,
that there might be some silting going on, right? But remember,
that part. Oh my gosh, yeah, that part. I was like, wow,
there's going to be silting. Oh God, no, no. But remember, because of the depth of the water within the bay, there was no problem with the silting. Right. So, so Morag.
So it was really random. I totally remember that part.
So Morag and her husband Shando are, of course, on the boat.
Oh yeah.
What was it was just like good to catch up with them again, I felt. You know, from their appearance earlier in the book.
Those were the people.
Yeah, yeah. They're the they're Daikini, and they were introduced by. Oh, I don't remember his name. There's a guy.
Oh yeah, totally that one guy. Yeah,
the guy who was popular with the ladies. Mulroon. Was it Mulroon or was it like?
Man, you know, there's so many characters. It's just like hard to keep track, you know. But I mean, it's fun. I mean,
I know,
we when it's like a movie, chart. Sometimes that helps you more. I don't know about you, but for me, when I see a movie, I can keep track because I'm like, okay, that guy looks like that.
Yeah,
and she looks like that, and I can, you know, she wore that. But sometimes when I'm reading it, it's hard to keep track.
Right, it's even harder in the book because it's like, you know, you don't even know which brownie wears the mouse hat. You know, which one is which one wears the mouse hat?
Mm-hmm. Oh, hang on. I just gotta answer this really quick. I hope. You know what? Actually, it's okay. Okay, it's stupid.
So
okay.
we got this. This sentence I enjoyed. Lanterns were needed now, not merely for illumination or to provide benchmarks for people trying to get their bearings, but for the simple comfort of something warm against the overarching gloom. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, sign me up for one of those too. You know, because the book has been pretty gloomy. I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we get this.
Do you also work with Uncle Mike on Mitch? That thing that he does. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
On Rip Tracks.
He's never mentioned.
Oh my
that.
Gosh, it's so funny. Sometimes, okay, like our whole family would go, "Oh my gosh, it's so funny that one movie where that guy came." It was so funny, and there was so funny. Uncle,
do you
Mike's
ever
really
actually
funny.
Watch the Rip Tracks that he makes?
We went to Sharknado.
Okay, that was a good one. Actually, it was a funny story about Sharknado.
So funny
about Sharknado 2.
It's already a bad movie. Like, what? Do they think they're making a good movie? And you're just like, really? I mean, come on, sharks! It's so dumb, but we laughed so hard.
I'm glad you appreciated that. It's nice to hear that you know your relatives are going out and seeing this. So yeah, my name was in the credits of that. You can look and see it. But this next sentence, this calls back another book we did on this podcast called Tech War. You get a very reminiscent sentence construction of Tech War. How bad, Thorne asked her, is it? So that's another one of those.
Are you talking about the book now again? Is
this yes, Thorne.
We're talking about the book. We're not talking Sharknado.
No, so Sharknado came out 6 years ago. That live show was probably 5 years ago. That's old news. They made five more of them after that. But this Thorne Astor was a context
that
clue
is awesome.
That it would be about this book. Let me know what's your next note. What is the next thing you wrote down to discuss about the 50 pages we all read?
Okay, I don't know. I got it. I was reading it. You know, I just had my wisdom teeth pulled out. So I was sitting on the couch and I read it and I was like, okay, there's like a mag site or an insight and there's like Shandos and Morags and Thorns. Sure. And it's just like so stupid. Plus, I don't even really enjoy reading. And you know what? I gotta go. It's like, I'm sorry. I'm Uncle Mike. I gotta go. Bye, what? Connor. Bye, Connor.
Where are you going?
I'm sorry.
Wow.
Bye. Thank you. I parked in your spot.
Okay.
You know how to pick them.
Well.
Did she just abscond with your $150? My $150?
Your $150. Yes. I don't know. Can a niece abscond?
I guess you know where she lives, but I mean, it sounds like she might be in college or possibly out of the house. I don't know. I don't know too much about your family tree. Do not give her any more money.
Okay, don't give
her
any
more money.
That's mine. Use the money I gave you. Sign out at... All right.
Wow, that worked out well.
That backfired.
Yes. Maybe you could run these by, like, a vetting committee, a.k.a. me, before you start introducing random 20-year-olds who... Did she read the book? I was very unclear.
It appears she did not. Random 20-year-olds. That's my beloved niece, Caitlin. She's studying systems management at a community college near us.
Do not hire her to manage a system. That did not seem to go well. And the wisdom teeth?
Yeah, I didn't know about that. Sorry.
I think she might have been still on medication.
No, she's like that all the time. I don't think there's a better version of Caitlin. Anyway, look, I'm going to nip off and read 50 pages of Shadow Moon.
Yeah.
And let's crank this thing up again. So pour yourself a cuppa, and we'll be back in a minute, folks.
Unbelievable.
Okay, better, happy now, Connor?
Quite, yeah.
My God.
You know, back to the baseline of expectations being met. God.
Thought I'd found an out.
We're all looking for them. We're all, you know, trying to figure out a way to skirt this responsibility. But, I mean, at this point now, there's only less than 100 pages left, so.
For the next episode, I mean, do you have a...
A niece?
A niece or a nephew?
Yeah, she's 15 months old. So, I'll hand it off to her, and you can hear her say, bah, and please. Please. She just learned that one. So, I imagine she might be saying that a lot. Please, no.
That's what we're all saying as we read it. I just met, there's a little toddler at our church who, trying to talk to him, and... very, very firm nose to every single thing that I said, which is can be amusing for about 2 minutes. It's very fun to ask questions and then have it. He just angrily, like, no, no, no.
My cousin has a boy who's probably close to two, I would guess. And so on Thanksgiving, he was over. And many years ago, I gave my mom one of those gift certificates where you can create your own Muppet. So she has this like orange Muppet puppet, and there was another boy over there who's probably 3 and a half, and he loves the puppet. He like hugs it, and the 2-year-old boy was terrified of the puppet.
Oh wow!
They put it on, and you'd approach it, and you just say no, no. And so they were bringing him out to the car, and I did not do this, but more than anything, I wanted to, like, as they were strapping him in, just like from the outside of the car, slowly raise the puppet up into his line of sight, just to see. But then I was like, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be the reason he's being explaining why he shot a senator in his 30s or something like that.
That went even darker than I thought it was going. Yeah, so I read the 50. So
good, good. Yeah. I'm happy.
Yeah, boy, there sure was a storm there, wasn't there? God.
We get some action. We get some more action. We get some endless action. It was like it's like a scene from one of a Transformers movie. They call it a set piece, I believe, where you're just like, I get it. Yep. It's like a video game cut screen that I cannot skip.
Yes. The one that comes to mind for me is in King Kong, I guess it's the most recent remake. Mm-hmm. No, there's been like spin-offs.
Oh, yeah. They returned, yeah.
Was a thing where they were chased by dinosaurs.
I've heard about it.
My God. And there's, you know, five distinct sections of this one action set piece. Now they're scrambling up a cliff. Now they're running towards a waterfall. Now just like, we get it. Trim this. That's what this storm was like for me.
But did you get any detailed descriptions of barf smell in King Kong?
Sadly, not none. Yeah. So I was happy to see that. What did you and Caitlin drill down on?
We drilled down on things. I tried to walk her through some of the earlier things. Tried to do some callbacks to the silting of the previous chapter. She did not find that amusing. Tried to make a few cracks about how I wanted some comforts against the overarching gloom. That was like talking to a brick wall. And then I made a tech war reference, which, believe it or not, the 20-year-old girl did not understand. So, again, so each one of those little bullet points, $50 out of my pocket for her. So,
well, sorry about that. Look, so chapter 11.
Yeah, foreboding to have that chapter be how we're starting. The bankruptcy.
Chapter 11 bankruptcy was exactly what I thought. I am bankrupt of any interest, obviously, at this point. But I did notice my first comment was that the Pathfinder, he gets off a good crack, I thought, and yet it gets nothing here. It gets no respect, and this is it. There, so that's, you know, cold and there's ice caps and everything, but he says, but there's intent behind all thoughts and cold calculation. He gave a rueful chuckle at the unwitting pun.
Ugh.
And I thought, you know, in terms of the level of humor of this, this should be people rolling in the aisles. The
sure.
Whir, like, clutching his fur and his strange claws, you know, slapping people's backs.
This is Rodney Dangerfield caliber at this point in time.
Yes.
Compared to the brownies.
Yeah. But you set the scene. We know we're in the middle of they're escaping from the Anakiri and her forces.
Yeah, the Thunder Riders. They've been, the chapter ended with them saying, we got to take to the seas. And where they took for the seas, how they met up with these people, I don't remember. But I did at some point in time consult the book that's at the beginning of the paperback just to sort of see like where this all happened.
The book at the beginning of the paperback.
The map at the beginning of the paperback. Sorry.
The map, of course, yes. I have not consulted that.
It really doesn't help.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're just going back over the same area right?
So, yeah, the spoiler alert, they're going to get in this boat. They fled Anguin because it was, you know, beset upon by death and destruction and witch fire. So they leave, and then they're just going to head back there. that's the end of this 50 pages. They take a circuitous journey.
Is it just that he couldn't think of any new king? Like, it's really hard to describe a new town. I'm just not going to do it. Remember the one we were at, and I described it before? Well, it's frozen now, and they're back there.
I think at this point, he might not have been able to come up with the name of a new town. I mean, that's the level of creative bankruptcy we're looking at.
But he's all still coming up with spells and sorcery. We've got a huge catalog of those already, and they're all about a micron apart in terms of what they are, and yet he's still adding new ones.
Yep, he's fleshing out the parsing the minutiae of the spell world. I forgot what it was at the end. Alora casts something, a new one that we hadn't heard before. She casts a summoning. So that's different. And then by the end, there's something that's not a minor glamour, but it is slightly removed from it.
Yeah, it's infuriating. But speaking of and casting spells, you know, Shando is a big character
presence.
Now.
Yeah.
And so the first time they mentioned him, or, you know, I guess this would be the second time they mentioned him in this chapter, I went back to look for who he was. But I really had hoped that, like, a kids' party level magician in a cape would step out from behind. I am Shando.
Shando the Amazing.
Yes. White gloves, you know, the top hat, everything, the little table with the top hat on it. Shando. You're not going to make it, okay? There's no call for that.
Your pig disappearing trick is very unsuccessful.
Everybody's out trick-or-treating anyway. They don't need you.
They have a... They're on the boat, but then maybe they're about to get on the boat because Elora tries to make a getaway on horseback.
I was very unclear about that. I thought they were on the boat. They're talking to everyone on the boat. They're doing boat things. There's boat descriptions. Suddenly, Elora darts off on her horse.
Yes, and where this...
What the... very unclear.
So, yeah, but it provided a good opportunity for some character development of Whir, who they also start referring to as Taximinian, something like that.
Yep, that burnt 6 minutes of my day trying to figure out why he is suddenly called Taximinian.
Yeah, maybe Shando is just one of those guys that always calls you by your last name. You know, one of those super familiar guys. Oh, Lestoka, how the hell are you?
Right.
So,
or in their language, it's the equivalent of Big Tuna or something.
Right.
Taximinian. I once ate a taxa, which is a kind of soup or something.
Oh, Taximinian.
Stosur. Okay. Anyway.
Right. But yeah, so like we've remarked upon how Thorne can do anything he needs to when the situation calls for it. And the Wearer is sort of like that too, because evidently, well, I'll just read it. The Wearer was on her heels that selfsame instant. She's riding on horseback, dropping flat to the ground, casting off his human stance in favor of a four-footed scramble that sent him up the sheer face of the cliff with frightening speed. So before we had him jumping in through skylights and ceilings when it needed to, and now it turns out he can just get on all fours and gallop up a sheer cliff face when the situation calls for it. Also, he can swim and live underwater. So a truly magical being, the Otter Man.
I still have the note, like, what the hell are you? I want to scream at this thing like Schwarzenegger does in What the Hell Are You?
That was in Kindergarten Cop.
Yes, Kindergarten Cop.
Sorry.
Yes. Yeah, but he has a weird face. He can't make a smile. Does he have a muzzle? There's fur. Does the fur cover his whole body? He puts blades in his, like, paws, but then he also has claws.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the ability to scramble up a sheer cliff face. What the hell are you?
Right. He's probably an action figure that sold very poorly, or they just, recast the mold as something else.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so he is no clearer to me, and it's no clearer why scrambling up quickly up the cliff face to stop Allura from going off down the beach or the headland, whatever. I don't understand that.
I think he's doing the time-honored cliche of heading her off at the pass, because we get this passage. It says, Rin sprang up before Allura's horse well below the Mizen, her animal going upon its hind legs so fast that Allura lost her grip and was out from her saddle as through a catapult. Thorne's heart surged to his throat as he watched, and only began to beat sensibly again when Garin charged up from behind in time to catch her before she struck the rocks. So Garin is also a superhuman as well. He's just like catching flying pig girls, with one hand as his other hands are on the rein. So we're all just action heroes at this point in time.
They do, obviously, they have their little specialties, right? We start to kind of drill down on what exactly their superhero powers are. At one point, I think he goes, like the Pathfinder, finding paths, like he, and the Rin, swimming with. So it's kind of like the Super Friends at one point. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Use your heat vision, Superman. Yes. Be reminded of what you're able to do.
But they get her back on. And of course, now Morag becomes quite a character. Morag says at one point, bugger me with a marine spike else, she fumed in exasperation.
Yeah.
And it's like, Morag, please.
You are
a lady. This is not ladylike behavior.
I mark that as sort of a, credit where it's due. That's a decent curse, from an old salty broad.
Yeah, they say later that they describe strings of curses, but then they don't give it. And I thought, man, we had one. Let's keep adding to this thing. But then he just, hand waves away a string of profanities. We'll come up with them. Tell me what they are.
It was a marlin spike, right? That's sort of what she meant?
Oh, yes. What did I say?
I think you said marine. But yeah, it's spelled Marlene. But yeah, so yeah, she's talking about an actual swordfish being jammed up her. So that's funny.
Nice.
speaking of highbrow stuff, There was a cry of outrage from the cabin below. Allura wasn't going quietly. So I suppose she's just reprising her business from the hot spring. Morag was all business again, reflection shunted aside by their turn towards the breakwater. There were crashes and groans all about as massive booms swung across the deck from one side to the other. So I'm not sure what they're subsisting on during this flee from Angwin, but they should probably cut back on it if it's having this sort of effect on the digestive tract.
Yes, indeed. Man, that's a thing that I didn't want to think of again. Is that like her superpower then? All right, let's not get into it. Hey, I've got a lot of them coming up. Sound challenge.
Okay. All right. Yep. I had a few of myself.
All right, so let's just make that. We're going to get a lot of sound challenges today.
Okay.
I was going to do a morning DJ drop-in, but I, sound challenge.
Oh, nice.
but I didn't get around to it. So, so this is a sound check.
Too busy not reading the book.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, you were busy.
So this is for you. The Wurr's response was a cough-like bark offered with a lively bob of the head that Thorne interpreted as a laugh. And I'll just finish it up, which was good because Thorne had attempted a joke. So I don't know what that joke was. It's not worth
it was,
going back to look.
It was Rin said not good, and Thorne said, "Is that a general observation, my friend, or a reference to something specific?"
Now I get it. That is good. That is good stuff. That is good stuff.
So I'm just going to do the cough-like bark. You will have to interpret the lively bob of a head as a laugh on your own.
So I guess you might be... I'm inferring the laugh that might not be there. You might just be coughing up an oyster that you ate, like half a shell stuck in your
Or like a whole fish skeleton. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's up to you to just whatever cough like bark you want, and then it's all on me to interpret as a laugh. So, okay.
Okay. Like, you know how, like, when a dog eats a bee, kind of?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I'm gonna laugh.
You're right.
From
that I was a pretty funny joke. I'm glad you appreciated it. There,
we can get that isolated, and we can just pump that in as a laugh track.
Yes, it's that sitcom one with the very distinct lady laughing way louder than everyone else, and you hear it like 15 times.
Do one of those Big Bang Theory redubs with just that as the laugh track.
Well, then we get right to it. I mean, there's just endless stuff of storm. So I think we all know what the tentpole of this chapter is, Alora.
Yes.
And if you have nothing before that, I'll just read that and we can discuss.
This should be a good intro to it. It's from just a moment before the storm really starts. So yeah, storm is brewing. They're sort of like, we can't sail on this. And he's like, we have to. But here's when Alora finally shows up on deck after she's been doing, you know, the massive booms down below. The child appeared to have been claimed by the otherworldly aspect of her heritage. She had been stripped of the outward portions of her being that marked her as human. Anna Carey was like looking at so this is contrasting her with Anna Carey. Anna Carey was like looking at a ghost, someone with the facade of humanity who had cast aside all within herself that gave it substance. So Claremont once again is just, you know, loves to point out the uggos in this situation. It's just like, ladies, you look like trash. And I just imagine them be like, well, I mean, yeah, we didn't have time to put on all our makeup this morning, but I hardly think it looks like we've been stripped of outward portions of our humanity. God, like what do the rest of the people look like in this society? Jeez.
Yeah, can we have a couple lines of, you know, Garen covered in his own filth or
right,
something? Like,
yeah.
No, he's riding around like a hero all the
he's
time.
He's got hairy moles on his nose and, you know, like, God, no one, I mean, just people who aren't these people. Like, everyone who is not a character is attractive, and then he's just stuck us with these people.
Yeah, you know for sure that he's got some growth or, you know, that hasn't been removed, some, you know, hardened lump behind his ear or something. So
right.
Let's get a description of that.
Alora shows up and the barfarama begins.
Yes, yes. Oh, and just to set the scene, before that, Anna Carey on the from the shore fires an arrow right at Thorne's heart, and Demon Child just grabs it out of the air.
Yes, again, action heroes.
So that's a superpower of hers.
Yeah, I was...
She's otherwise just riding around going, duh.
Right, yeah.
And then suddenly... Oh, I can grab arrow?
Yeah, she's Neo all of a sudden, in bullet time. Yeah. I wasn't sure what the, you know, again, I'm not sure of any in this situation, but the physical proximity as they sail out of the bay to the shore. I don't know how far an arrow can travel. Just more things to be uncertain about.
And also uncertain why those two are connected in some way. He makes something about, you know, even if they were in full battle somewhere, they will always recognize each other. Like, their eyes will lock on each other. Like, I know you.
Yeah, it's like this. She painted his forehead with star stuff, and then they did that. I think that's what that's all about, but I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't, you know, to what end, I don't remember.
But it's, you know, it's
achieved.
Like the fugitive stuff here, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's just, yeah, Javert and Jean Valjean.
Yes. All right, so let's get to it. Here's Alora. Alora wasn't so fortunate. She doubled over, vomiting miserably onto a deck awash to the depth of an inch. It was an awful sight. Oh, I thought it sounded pretty good, but yes. Just a reminder that it was awful. Thorne didn't want to imagine how much worse to experience as the child coughed and sobbed and retched some more, long past the point her stomach was empty. We will spare you the sound challenge on that.
Okay.
The sudden gusting stench was indescribable.
Yes. It proved more than Garen could bear either, and he was just as sick. So she triggers the Stand By Me pie-eating contest. Everyone barfs. Unbelievable.
Once again, picture the little baby going, goo, 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 in Willow. That's what she's been reduced to once again.
Yeah. Oh, it's really incredible. So that's not the last time that anyone's going to barf in this thing. But the just filling us in on the stench, you know, which no one has ever thrown up and been like, oh, man, I need to see if Yankee Candle can replicate this. But then for the rest of the thing, it keeps reinforcing that, like, he walks downstairs where the, everyone had barfed and was still overcome by the smell. We know it smells awful.
Yeah. And this whole chapter, he does what he normally does. He starts at 11, where everything is just miserable and people are vomiting and arrows are being shot at people's hearts and everyone's tired and broken down and bleeding and people are getting cut by snap lines and then things get worse and it just keeps going and going. It's so fatiguing to read.
Yeah, it's a so the sequence that happens at the end of this to Morag, truly incredible. So just if you're not reading along like most of you are at this point, I'm guessing, just imagine how he's going to take it up to, you know, a 17 from this 11, and just see how close you get. We'll fill you in at the as it happens in the sequence, but think about it in the meantime.
Right. How much more can he go? This is a thing that I think it's been sort of mentioned glancingly before, but now we get a full picture of it. For years, Thorne had lived with spells that blunted the effect of weather. He kept himself dry in monsoons, cool in deserts, surviving the worst nature had to throw against him. But he'd never seen a storm like this. Mm-hmm. So why is he always the most bedraggled man in the world? Like, always on the edge of, like, I haven't another ounce of strength in me.
Right.
For the love of God. It's like he's walking around cool as a cucumber, being touched by nothing.
Yeah, he's got, like, a personal, like, AC field, you know, air conditioning all around him at all times if he needs it, or a, you know, virtual umbrella.
He should be like, you know, I'm one of those people where, you know, it's hot at all. I'm just, like, pouring sweat and, you know, pit stains under my arms, and I'd be with a guy who's like wearing a tuxedo and looking like James Bond. Like, how are you doing this?
Right. Yeah. They glow or glisten as opposed to the just, you know, constantly looking damp.
Yes. Well, that's Willow apparently at all times.
Yeah,
he should be fine. What are you so? He's always bitching and griping about how tired he is.
Yeah, and we get more of that in this one too. If his, you know, again, his fatigue is something that started at 11 as he healed the mountains or whatever. And I don't think he's ever been described as anything other than, like, you know, exhausted to the fiber of his bone. And yet he's still, you know, pulling off things like controlling a hurricane with his pinky.
Right. So, yeah. His beard is tangled with thorns and there's beetles in his ears. But he seems like he should be fine.
Yeah.
He's fine.
God forbid he ever gets a good night's sleep and wakes up, you know, with the ability to, you know, reinvent the universe if he's got his whole faculties about him.
Get to another sonic challenge right away.
All right.
He thought of returning to the cabin, and from his feet below felt as much as heard the rhythmic kalumpa kalumpa of the pumps.
Okay.
So kalumpa kalumpa.
So yeah, he sent two people down to to bail essentially. So like,
kadoober, 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 kadoober. You're right. That was funny. Oh, that wasn't. That wasn't a laugh. That was very similar to your barking cough.
Yeah, I mean, that could be the sound of the when the pump stops actually getting water to suck up and it's run dry.
Yeah.
I like this. I wanted to give a firm settle down to the storm description. Because we're going to get a lot of them, but this is sort of trying to set the table. He's looking into the storm and he thought of all the dragons that ever were compressed into a single awful beast, and that monster roaring with force enough to crack the world to its core. And that's, you know, that sounds pretty good until you remember that in our last section, a dragon showed up at a wedding and was killed within like 30 seconds of revealing itself. So right. they haven't really been established as the fearsome force the author really wants us to think of here.
Yes. And the storm itself, it gets kind of blamed on the demon, but he also thinks it's probably just natural. I was very unclear about.
Yeah, he said something. The thorn merges with the wind and water. So he learns that once he does that, he learns that there was a piece of the demon in this, as there was likewise a foulness to the weather, a taint that told him that while the storm was natural, its genesis was anything but. Not sure if that makes any sense. You know, like this, like, you know, the cloned dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. You know, what, are these unnatural? No, they're perfectly natural. Well, how'd you get them? Oh, we like retrofitted their DNA from frogs in a lab. Well, I don't think you can call that natural at this point in time.
Right.
Good.
But then it's also this over the storm, he hears the deceiver's voice.
Yes. Yeah. So the deceiver starts weighing in too. He hesitated, heard sudden laughter, the deceiver's voice, mockery, livened by true regret, recognition that he was unworthy, colored by sorrow that he should come to such a moment. Who are you? He screamed in the voice of the wind. Why are you doing this? So, yeah, there's a hint of the demon, hint of the deceiver. Who knows if they're the same thing? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if the deceiver is like rolling with Anna Carey at this point in time. Or if he's just sort of infected things. But he starts making his presence felt very quickly. Morag was still mostly broadside when a wave swept the hull upward, everyone on deck grabbing frantically for handholds as it heeled close to vertical. Ears presented Thorn with crashes from below as cupboards popped from mountings. Damn you, deceiver.
Wow.
He's knocking the cupboards off the walls on the ship. This is truly demonic stuff.
Oh, our throat coat lozenges. No.
Yeah,
bastard.
We were going to have those cupboards replaced with something that was not the ones that came with it, but we are still relying on them until we had enough money saved. Damn you.
And you have to take the one with the baking soda and the baking powder. You know what? We weren't going to cook during the storm
it's
anyway.
It's probably fine, very likely. It's we're just eating. The hardtack keeps pretty well. So
yeah, that's right. I have another. Before the Sonic Challenge, I want to point this out. In that flash of terrible transcendence, he understood the way the physical world worked, saw how the energies of the storm could be diverted and moderated. The power was his for the taking had he the courage to seize it.
Okay.
So this little dude who, you know, Willow, making pigs disappear. Now, literally has the power of God himself.
Yeah.
He sees how the physical world works, like down to its atoms, and has the power to take control of it.
Yes.
Okay.
But he's very tired.
He's very, very tired, and he's unable to do a lot of other things. I don't know what's going on. I think that this... The Clucas goes down little rabbit trails and goes, maybe he can't do that.
Right, yes, exactly. Wouldn't that be neat? Well, yeah, sure. Because if he can, you know, do all these things, he's, you know, he should be able to, you know, things should be going a lot better for them than they currently are if all these things we're told are true.
I don't, this whole thing, and then there's several, maybe even more healings and things, but we'll get to those in a moment.
Sure.
Before that, I have another challenge for you, and this once again goes to the stench.
Okay.
Thorn thought to go below, but there was more water than before, despite the efforts of the pumps, and the stench was worse than any privy. So I would like to name the smelliest privy I can think of. Mine was probably one at a roadside scenic outlook about 20 miles north of Spooner, Wisconsin. Terrible. Had to be done, though. Yours? The smelliest privy you've ever been in.
My thought immediately goes to the office we worked in like four offices ago, where anytime like you'd come back from the bathroom, we were on the first floor of this office, and they were doing constant construction on the second floor, so their bathrooms were always... blocked off, and for just a stretch of months, People would just come in and be like, man, someone was in their second floor in it.
I thought immediately of that too, but I figured it would be your choice. I would get in fairly early to that office. So the construction workers had already been there. I don't know whether they got in at 6 or whatever. I would sometimes get in at 6:30.
Wow.
Make a stop in, you know, I have to have a cup of coffee on the way to work, stop into the bathroom and immediately turn heel and just head out of there like, my God, it is 6:30 a.m. Who has had the time to utterly wreck this bathroom at that time of the morning? What are these construction workers doing?
You see a sacred princess turning the corner as they're heading to the elevator.
Just pulling down the pink outer garment.
So, yeah, a stench worse than any privy. I don't want to imagine it, frankly. Maybe that's the sort of thing that Ernest Cline's Stink Tower might be able to replicate if they make a video game out of this movie. Have I told the story on here before? The podcast Threedom, if you tell a story that you have already told on the podcast, someone else gets to spank you. But have I told the story about the Princeton Junction train station?
I don't believe so. This is we have an exclusive here.
So it's not necessarily the smell, but it was going up to, we would sometimes in college, we would travel up from Charlottesville to New York City. My friend Derek and I were going up. We'd park at Princeton because we would drive up, leave our car there, take the train in. This is the year that the Sacagawea dollars came out, so it was probably 2000, 2001.
Very memorable, sure.
And then I'm standing on the thing just waiting for the train to come, just probably staring off into the distance because we didn't have phones. And Derek emerges from the men's room, stricken, ashen. I was like, what happened? And he's just like, I will give you this brand new Sacagawea dollar if you go into there and look at the men's room. So I walk in, and it was as if someone had taken a water balloon full of poo and just hucked it at the toilet, and it just like hit the back of the wall. It was, you know, we've talked about physics challenges in these books, like trying to imagine how this would happen, how it would look like. Impossible to imagine any other scenario this could have happened. I walked out. I mean, I've never regretted not having a phone that could, you know, snap a picture for posterity more. And I've always thought about that, you know, as every time we pass Princeton.
I have a companion story to that, but I should probably we should probably move on. I'm going to say it.
Okay, good.
I was at a small Wisconsin bar once, and there was a bathroom that was kind of narrow and long, and so when this spring-loaded door opened to it, the urinal was right there. Like, the door, there's the urinal. It's the very first thing you see, like, a foot away, right?
Mm.
And this is, you know, a busy place. I went in there, and someone had dropped the deuce in the urinal that was right there.
So, like, the door... The door would open and you would like see, you'd get a glimpse of whoever was peeing probably.
Yes, well, 100%. So this person not only did that, but had the, can you imagine the force of will to just assume that no one's going to just throw the door open and see you fully sitting inside
the men's
urinal. Anyway, that's a... Wow, that's what this book has driven us to. Blaming this on Clucas.
I'd like to welcome anyone who is having their lunch as they listen to this. Welcome. Anyone who might be hopping on the train at Princeton to head into the big city for the weekend.
Someone's eating their clean salad from that they've lovingly prepared.
So yeah, stench worse than any privy. Then we get some old-fashioned, Shando grabbed his hand against Thorne's back and literally threw the Nelwyn the length of the cockpit to collide with a steering assembly. I feel like that was a thing in the 80s, you know, like a very questionable tasted thing where, you know, dwarf tossing, wasn't that a thing people would do?
Oh, very much so. I mean, referenced several times in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh, okay. So, yeah,
they,
maybe.
They toss the dwarf and... Huh. He's like, don't throw me or something, you know. I don't know.
But there's like some ropes lashing as the boat breaks apart from all these waves. One of them strikes Morag and she gets a serious wound. But Thorne comes and heals her, I guess. He has the same powers that I guess Jedi now have in the new Star Wars movie. You just like rub your hand like Mr. Miyagi and it heals him. Mm-hmm. And so we get this this has been chock full of humor, this chapter, and this is no exception. She says, "Bride's gift, Nelwyn," she said when she was done. Tables turned between them, so he was the one bereft of strength, you don't say, and she holding him close. "You're a useful bod to have about." "Don't leave port," he returned in like humor, "without one." So just my favorite hallmark of fantasy, other than detailed description of barf smell, is era-specific American Express slogan references. That's what exactly. I like. That's what I'm hoping for when I go see a Escape to a World of Fairies and Elves.
Yeah. And this was the moment, by the way, that I did a little bit of a spit take. So Morag and Shando are married?
Yeah.
Was this was known already?
Well, don't forget that there was a guy named Mulroon who was very popular with the ladies, who was like down with Morag, or she was his, like, he handed them off to her. I don't know. I don't remember Shando showing up, but just don't confuse him with Mulroon.
Right. I just didn't I didn't see them snogging on the deck or anything, or dear, could you pass me that Marlin spar, if you could, please. it just took me by surprise because maybe it had been mentioned 1,100 pages ago or something.
Possibly, yes.
but then there's a confusing thing where out of nowhere, with no break or anything, there's a description of a scream that happens.
Okay.
And I wanted as a... Sorry. That's later. This is okay. This is Morag letting loose a scream that would put any banshee to shame.
Okay.
So that's a sonic challenge. So back off your mic and
man.
Give me a scream that would put any... Think of all the banshees you know and screw them, because your scream is going to be... It's gonna put them all to shame. So when you're ready.
That's my cough-like bark there.
And a laugh. So you did the scream and then laughed at the end. Uh-huh. That was good. Yeah, that was, I think that was Roger Daltrey, 1987, maybe.
Sure,
level scream
yeah.
There.
Yeah, he not packing it in. Yeah, maybe his Super Bowl performance in 2005.
Okay.
I don't know if that would put a banshee to shame, but I don't know. I don't want anyone to think anyone's getting murdered in here.
Well, we have banshee listeners, and I would hope that they wouldn't feel bad. You're still tops in our books.
Will not banshee shame on this podcast.
That's correct.
We will humor shame, because they keep packing it with humor. I guess they're trying to make up for the brownies being gone. So we get this exchange regarding the ship's barometer. I don't know why they're looking at the barometer in the middle of the storm. Like, it seems like, you know, you've got all the information you need in front of you. It's worse than every dragon that had ever lived combined into one mega dragon. They're talking about the barometer, and Morag says, the lower it goes, the worse the storm. Thorin says, it's very low. Morag responds, tell me about it. so he must have just been watching like TGIF in the mid 90s and just like jotting down all the responses that the characters were saying to rapturous bark like laughter.
Wait, do the line again and I'll give you a proper laugh. I laughed. Mine wasn't satisfactory to the moment. So go ahead.
Lower it goes, worse the storm. Well, it's very low. Tell me about it. how would that studio audience respond if during the big kiss scene when the characters finally smooch and like their kids are looking into them from the other side of the kitchen or something? So that's the
ooh. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Right. Yep, you got
good.
It.
All right, good to know. I'll parse the differences there.
Mm-hmm.
He starts like longing for the eagles to show up, so there's some foreshadowing there. They start talking about that we better get back to Anguin, like that's going to be our safest spot. And then Allura decides she's going to use something, which was the summoning I mentioned earlier. she like comes out on the boat and she's going to perform a summoning, which Thorne only says to himself. He cried to himself, mostly to himself, because none of the others would understand, which is true. I don't understand. I'm sure that the otter man would not understand what a summoning is.
Yeah, he might laugh inappropriately at that moment, so it's best that he's not there.
But so the summoning she casts is she gets up and she's sort of pulling an Ahab here. She starts like, you know, raging into the storm. I am the sacred princess Alora Dannon. It is my destiny to rule the 13 realms. It is your duty to obey. Wind and waves, hear me. I command you to be still. So it's sort of like her, turning a corner as a character. She's like, you know, she's been, waited on hand and foot her whole life, but now she's coming into her own. So how is she described in this sort of moment of self-actualization?
So good. Yes, please.
She was hardly wider than the mast itself, a plump scarecrow in tattered finery, her hair blown to hell, stinking of her own vomit, so weak she trembled where she stood. It's incredible. He just keeps piling on. So, like, I wondered, I mean, we're obviously never going to read anything else that this guy has ever written, but I just wondered if there was something in his past that like might have just had these warranted these descriptions. You know, she's been described as like a pig-faced plump scarecrow. So I went looking. We've dug these up before, the hidden Alexa conversations get uploaded to the dark web.
Oh, right. Yes, of course.
They're always recording. But so it turns out that like footage from his house, Chris Claremont's house, after he passed away, reached the dark web. It was just like running, really? I guess. Yeah. So he died, left everything to his two sons.
Right.
And so they had to go. They just like the attorney was like, hey, your dad left you this house. It's full of crap. You need to take care of it. So they went over there. They didn't know that Alexa was running the whole time as they showed up to sort of like go through his belongings and see if there was anything worth keeping.
Wow. That's amazing. How would you search for that when you looked for that? I'm just curious in case I ever want to search for Alexa recordings of the surviving family members of someone who has died. Going through their stuff. How do I search for that?
You put that in quotes.
Oh, okay.
Or, I mean, you know, and if you just go to Alexa, leaked recordings of surviving family members of people who have died.com, it'll turn up.
They're all there. Okay.
You got to use, you got to use Tor and a VPN, but it'll turn up.
Okay, good. All right, done and done. Well, let's, I assume we have it ready to...
Yeah, all queued up. Well, here it is. Dad's house.
Think anyone's been in here since he died?
Sure doesn't look like it. Man, what a mess.
Yeah, well, this crap ain't gonna haul itself to Goodwill.
You're telling me. Thanks a pile, Dad.
Hey, come on now. I mean, sure, Dad wasn't perfect, but you've always been super hard on him.
I haven't been a hard on him. He was a jerk.
Oh, come on.
It's right there in his writing. Every female character is either a busty seductress or some hideous uggo.
Well, I mean, I think that's a bit of an oversimplification.
It definitely is not. In Shadow Moon, he spent the whole book reminding you how unattractive a 13-year-old girl is.
Whoa, you read that garbage?
Yeah. Here. Her eyes were all closed and squinty like a pig's, her mouth cast in a perpetual pout. And check this one out. She made a supremely ugly face. The joke on her, of course, was that it wasn't a whole lot different from the expression she usually wore.
Not just read, but evidently memorized?
Yeah, you can defend that jerk all you want, man. I don't think you should be comparing people to pigs. That's just me.
I guess you've got a point. Here, help me with this box.
Sure.
Careful. Wait. Careful.
Careful. It's slipping. God damn it. I told you to wait.
What the hell are these? Sexy Animal Farm?
Ugh.
Charlotte's Web for adults? Babe Pig in the City unrated director's cut?
That one says it's heavy on the hogs, hogs.
This is all pig erotica.
Oh my god.
Look at this. It's sexy fan art of the pig people from that Twilight Zone episode.
Ugh, put that away.
Custom drawing of Orson from U.S. Acres kissing Porky Pig while Petunia watches through a hole in the wall?
Yeah, I can see that.
An invoice estimate with a picture of Arnold from Green Acres saying, "Do me, Mr. Claremont. He was going to get this as a tattoo."
I think I'm going to be sick.
No. Don't you see what this means? Dad was attracted to pigs.
You're sort of saying, like, that was a good thing?
It means he wasn't a dick. He was being complimentary to the pig girl. He thought she was beautiful.
Okay. I don't want to discuss this. I'm just going to bring some boxes out to the van.
Oh, God.
What? What?
This one says swine on it.
I'm sure it's harmless.
What makes you think that?
Oh, relax. Look, it's just an acronym.
Oh, phew.
Sexy wearable implants, nice and erotic. Aw, it's full of curly pigtails.
Gah!
I bet he would wear those to pig fancier conventions.
Oh, fanciers. That's a hell of a way to put it.
This really makes you see his work in a whole new light.
Yeah, a much, much worse one.
Look, it can't be all bad. What's in that one?
It says, anniversary gifts for Betsy.
Oh, see, those are gifts that he never got around to giving Mom.
Aw.
Is it full of pig nose masks?
Yeah, it's full of pig nose masks.
Well, set fire to the place and never look back?
I'll get the gasoline.
All right. Oh, look, Alexa was recording this the whole time.
So yeah, a little insight into Chris Claremont's.
Well, that kind of turns it on its head there, doesn't it?
That, don't say turns on after all of that. It's I don't. yeah, he's also not dead, so that might have been. I'm not sure. Maybe that's speculative Alexa leaking. I don't know at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say this would be new, fresh information here. But
we're all just gritting our teeth and trying to.
So we're at the end here, but just a question. Did you understand, like, what is she doing here? She's obviously trying to stop the storm, but, you know, Willow Thornheller has done that himself already. He's sort of risen up before the storm in some way, right?
Yeah.
So this seems like a repeated beat of, like, everyone's trying to scream into the storm at some point or something. So I don't know exactly what she does.
Yeah, I think it's, based on, knowing how people have told stories before, I'm guessing that maybe he started to have it a bit more under control, but then she goes and, bollocks everything up by intervening on her own. I think she makes it worse. I think she maybe subdues the storm and they crash down off the wave or something like that.
That's what I thought was the obvious thing, but then the storm is still going.
Oh, so the storm is very much still going.
Yeah, so I didn't understand so she's stopped half a wave? Broke off half a wave on the other side of the...
because I mean, that sort of is, I think, what we're led to believe. The ship sort of pulls a wily coyote and, is in the middle of the air. Everyone looks around and then waves bye-bye and it crashes back down, I guess.
Yeah. Morag holds up the little sign that says, uh-oh.
That's how I sort of interpreted it. It's like the perfect storm with cartoon physics.
That's how I interpreted it, except then it wasn't still, so she didn't do anything. So anyway, remains to be seen. Who cares? Whatever.
Yeah. The way this chapter ends is they reached the crest of the wave, and the mystery was broken by a hollow wail from Shando. Oh my God.
Hollow wail from Shando? Give it a go, please.
Oh my God.
Wow, yeah. That Shando's different.
Throwing my hat into the ring for Shando. Yeah, no, his wife is the salty one. So
Shando's a bit of a delicate flower.
Yeah, that was also how it sounded when he got buggered by a Marlin spike.
Oh my gosh! Wow, there was a little bit of the late great Don Knotts in there. I don't know if that's what you were going for.
Sure.
No, you're Why a big not? Don Knotts fan.
Oh, yeah, but that's how that chapter ends, sort of in the middle of a storm. The storm will resume, but I believe we do have some fanfic to read before that. And now I bet they bitching because my flow switching, trying to tell me what to write. I've bought some fanfiction. Can't they just be happy? I no longer have to face eviction that I'm living on my life. I'm living on my inner vision. Right, I am not confident at all, but here we are. We've got five passages that either come from the remaining 94 pages of Shadow Moon or our fanfic written, dreamt up, brought into this world by our loyal listeners. So let's see. We've had some good luck with this. I think this has been the hardest one for people to latch onto. We'll see if that streak continues.
Yeah, and I think that it's a real testament if people are writing fanfic that they are still reading or have read enough. So
sure.
thank you for doing that.
This very first one. The forest around had been turned into a cathedral of flame, incandescent orange in contrast with the cold white of the Deceiver's ruination, but as destructive and final, blackening all that it touched and fountaining into the skies to rain down in soft white ash, mingling with the seemingly never-ending snow. Thorne stepped forward, confronting the fire Drake Wrangler as he conducted his symphony of destruction. He paused and gestured grandly at Thorne, his mane of russet locks swaying in the heat and fiery updrafts.
Hmm. Well, that, wow. Without any kind of fireworks or tells there, that is some poker face there. I don't know. I'll take the bait. I'll say that that's real.
Okay. Number two. It is my destiny. Mine, Alora cried, her face contorting into a grotesque mimicry of an adolescent. It is yours, called out the demon child. I don't want your destiny. You can take it, Corey responded, trying to position herself upon Crags. Lies! Alora shut out a burst of rage-filled energy. The inherent strength of her inner magic continued to frighten Thorne. It would have destroyed Corey almost immediately had she not instinctively knew how to enact a protection charm to deflect these attacks. Energies flew from both of them, brilliant colors igniting the sky that would be beautiful were it not for the doom they withheld. And there lay Thorne, powerless to stop these two children, his two children, from fighting. He loved them both, and the last thing he wanted was to see them destroy one another, and who knows how many others in the process.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm
sort of building towards that, you know, way.
Yeah, I'm going to say that it's fanfic, because I kind of have a hard time believing that Thorne is loving that demon child that much. I don't know. Okay. Daddy love me? Look, you're too young to even understand what that means. So.
Yeah, and then she does a backflip onto a horseback and right. wins the Kentucky Derby. Number three. Thorne could feel his bones begin to crack, line of fissure running along every bone in his body until he felt they'd explode outward in 1,000 splinters. His skin contracted and stretched taut over his frame, and it too threatened to burst at 1,000 places at once. The pain was unendurable, as was the knowledge that he'd failed so close to success. He'd lost his wife and child, he'd lost his home, and now he'd die with the knowledge that all his sacrifices were for nothing. These thoughts shattered his mind as the Deceiver was shattering his body. With a cruel look of satisfaction, the Deceiver dryly taunted his helpless victim. So ends Drumheller, abandoned by all his friends at the end. Not quite all of them, came a voice from behind the Deceiver's head. He turned sharply just in time to catch a cream pie full in the face. It was Frangine along with Rule.
To catch a what?
Cream pie.
Okay. Well, that would be fanfic. I was in on it, actually, because of the number of times that Thorne and people around him are like broken apart and
yes.
ground into powder and their skin being pulled and
body
every
horror.
Atom being dissipated, turned into stone and then ice and then fire and then ripped apart, put back together, torn up again, thrown against a wall, stomped on by a giant. And and that happens like 38 times.
Yeah, really.
So this didn't surprise me to hear it again, but a cream pie is a bit too much.
Okay. Number four. I beg your pardon, Frangine brushed his midsection again. I have every faith in Master Thorne. He will rescue me. Since hearing her story, he'd called Thorne Master twice, a term he'd hesitated to use before. Evidently, her story had done him some good, anyway. And if Master Thorne was coming, she might get a second chance after all. She eyed her fellow dancer. Perhaps I can survive this, she agreed. And perhaps Cien was already safe somewhere. I'll do my... Her collar tugged up and backward. Half-strangled, Ula yanked her headpiece back on, flailing for balance as Jorga hauled her over his side. She dug her fingers and toes into fetid flesh. Jorga purred as if tickled by her struggling.
What the hell is that? well, it sounds weird enough to... I can see the bait dangling before me, but I'm going to say it's fanfic.
Okay. Final one, number five. Then I suppose I'll have to die, Thorne said, because I don't know where the brownie is. As Alora watched him, her mouth twitched as if beginning to form a smile. "You were a fool to come here," she said. "Your fate was sealed since the moment you set foot upon Angwin." As Alora stepped beside the looking glass, Thorne could see her true nature manifest. How had his mage sight not revealed it before? No, it couldn't be, he thought, that she was bewitched by wizardry so powerful it could override his own. In the visage of the glass was not the Alora he knew, but a despicable creature, one that made the princess's swinish body look petite in comparison. This creature was a twisted parody of a woman, with a skin of a deep violet hue, glowing yellow eyes, and weed-like hair. Willow now knew the truth, that Alora, too, was under the spell of the deceiver.
That's good. I think it's fanfic.
Okay.
But Alora, too, would be a good title for a movie.
No. So, 1 second. Fanfic.
Okay. Calculating the results.
And, yes, you did. Yes. You did quite well. I believe you missed one.
Ah.
Let's start at the start. The first one was the forest was the Cathedral of Flame, something about fire drakes. That was you said that was real. That was fanfic written by Patrick.
Okay.
Yeah. It was he had a bit more there, but I cut it off. I wish I had done that with one of the other ones. Number two, that was grotesque mimicry of an adolescent, Corey and Alora fighting to the death. You thought that was fanfic. That was fanfic written by Harris.
Well, it was well done. It was well done.
Number three, I almost considered stopping this one. I didn't even realize it was going to have such a tell at the final, second to last sentence. The cream pie in the face. You thought it was fanfic. It was fanfic written by Tom. Just wish I had stopped that one because it started off being very tricky.
Yeah. Oh, I would have bid on that. Yeah.
the fourth one, I omitted to read the final sentence of this one. You thought it was fanfic. It was fanfic. It was submitted, not written, by Oprah Pimpfrey. I don't think that's their real name. So this was a excerpt from a Star Wars novelization. The final line I neglected to omit was, "His jizz whalers swung into a new dance tune." So he was like, "Jizz whalers is a actually." I'm like, "We know what jizz whalers are. Yes. We've covered this before. This is sadly versed in this type of thing."
Yeah.
So yep, that's from a Star Wars book. And then this last one, you thought it was fanfic. It was fanfic, but he said, this was by John. He said, "Bonus points to Mike if he recognizes that this is a scene from Jack the Giant Killer with the names changed."
Oh. Wait, what was it about again?
This was your fate was sealed the moment you set foot. Had his mage sight not revealed it before, Willow knew the truth that Alora, too, was under the spell of the deceiver. I didn't recognize it.
Huh. Yeah, no, I would not recognize that.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, yeah, so just one wrong, but yeah, it was Patrick who tricked you.
All right. Well, I think that's two. Let's see, you were 5 for 5. Mm-hmm. I was 4 for 5 last time and 4 for 5 this. So,
yeah.
This is we're doing well and much better in this book, I think, than any other.
But I would trade it all for fanfic that's harder to guess. That would be my position on this.
Right. well, on to chapter 12.
Yes, yes. On to the continuation of the storm.
So, no reason for a chapter break at all.
No.
We are at the exact same moment, we haven't moved locations. No accelerating action. We're just right where we were.
Yes. So it starts off with some, you know, huge waves just crashing everywhere, ships falling up and down. It essentially starts pulling a Titanic. You know, it's doing just a full vertical positioning as it starts to sink and stuff. But big moment does occur. Thorne couldn't see anymore with eyes, didn't need to, howled because of it as insight danced from mind to mind, tantalizing him with flashes from everyone save Alora. Hatches and portholes gave way under the tremendous impact, water bursting into the cabin with the force of fire hoses, solid wood visibly flexing like sheets of tin, so that even cubbies thought stoutly secured were sent flying. There was no sign of Burris.
Oh, no.
I know. I thought the same thing. I sort of just put the book down, took a walk around the block. What has been your favorite memory of Burris so far? I mean, since he's, I think, has been killed now.
Oh, man, let's run some tender music here and let's recall all the things about
the Incredible Hulk theme song. I had to look him up. I think he had been the first mention of him was maybe 3 pages earlier. It said, "Morag," Shando pointing from the wheel, while Burris, the less injured crewman, did his best to rescue the torn halyard.
Mm. See, so, I was going to guess that maybe he'd given a hand to the paw of the Wren and pulled him up on deck or something. Would have been his final act.
So, yeah, Boris was, you know, he died as he lived, barely mentioned in Shadow Moon.
Let's pour one out for him now, shall we? This was an interesting... this is an interesting sentence here. He saw the foremast break, the shock of impact tearing him loose from the stanchion he was holding and dropping him to the limit of his lifeline with such force that it felt worse than being poleaxed by a sledgehammer. So, very, very strange turn there. You could have just stopped.
Right. Poleaxed?
Being poleaxed by a poleaxe.
Poleaxe, you might think.
Yes. So that was exciting to switch that up. Like, okay, pole axe, I've got that in my head. Buy a sledgehammer. Okay, so take away the axe part of it and shorten the handle. Gotcha.
I'm going to write some hard-boiled detective fiction where, you know, he awoke after being pistol-whipped by a machete.
Yes.
What is going on?
So for the next, I don't know, 47,000 paragraphs, we just get this ship just being rent and people getting shattered and pulverized and cut to the bone and pierced and stabbed and bloody. And so that 11 that we started at, I think he's trying to go to 23 here or something. Mm-hmm. But I just begin to lose, I don't know. Well, once again, the ship is just breaking apart, which it has been for two chapters.
Yeah, so you were confused. It turns out that our duo of authors was also pretty confused, too, because we get one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in a actual published book. I don't know if you picked up on this, but this is truly insane. We get a actual copy and pasted block of text.
What?
Did you see this?
No.
Oh, my God. So,
maybe it's not in my ebook. I've been reading it off the ebook.
Let's see. I can provide pages so people can confer with this themselves. But this is page 333. We get this passage. The waves were as monstrous as ever, and the transom had developed a nasty crack that made its ragged, uneven way past the waterline. It wouldn't be long before a combination of wave motion and the drag of the anchor itself tore the whole stern loose. Then, even Thorne knew, they'd sink in a matter of racing heartbeats. So that's page 333. If you'd care to turn to page 338, the very first paragraph on that page. Corey had seen a danger the others had missed. The transom had developed a nasty crack that made its ragged, uneven way past the waterline. It wouldn't be long before the combination of wave motion and the drag of the sea anchor tore the whole stern loose. Then, even Thorne knew they'd sink in a matter of racing heartbeats.
Wow.
So they just copied and pasted the whole paragraph, and then they changed maybe a couple words so they knew they had done it. Like they took out sea anchor, they changed that, they added in sea anchor, and then they added Corey seeing the danger, but then two sentences later, Thorne knew they'd sink in a matter of racing heartbeats, so they didn't change the perspective of who was observing the cracked transom.
Bizarre.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. It's like, you know, Dwight David Thrash did that a whole bunch, but he was obviously not a published author with an editor.
My God.
Yeah, I don't know. And then so someone wrote in, a listener named Colin wrote in and said that this actually happened before. Chapter 2, page 83, said, "The better to keep an eyes on one another," said Frangine in Thorne's ear from a perch atop the Nelwyn's shoulder, snugged amongst the folds of his cloak where the brownie would be hard to see. And then he said on page 84, the next page, "First a Daikini flew along a trail few of his kind have ridden," said Frangine in his ear from a perch atop Thorne's shoulder, snugged amongst the fold of his coat where the brownie would be hard to see.
God.
Yeah. So
come on, Klukas. You've got resources, man.
Truly amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. So, they just said to hell with everybody. We're not, they knew they were going to make three of these, so they thought it would at least sell something, but God.
Well, that'll be hopefully appearing in A fanfic. Oh, we can't do fanfic next time. Dang.
No, we can. Well, you may. I guess we could. There's still 50 pages after that. So, I mean.
Oh, wait. Do we have two more readings?
Well, it depends if we want to cover 94 pages in one.
Oh, God. Is it 94? Oh.
I mean.
Yes. Okay. Much better.
Yeah.
There's a moment here that reminded me of, I'm going to take it highbrow here. In Macbeth, there's a scene away from the castle where somebody is describing how evil the knight was. There's a lot of that about, you know, when he kills the beloved king, who is almost likened to kind of like an angel. And he talks about the lightning, and there were strange voices in the air. The horses broke out of their stables and tried to eat each other. And it goes on and on, and then the next guy goes, "'Twas a rough night." And every production that does it has a hard time not getting a giant laugh because it's so, you know, it's unintentional. He's supposed to be adding, it's supposed to be, yes, you know, "'twas a rough night." But it's tough to not laugh at that. And in this one, 700 pages of them being shattered and the water and, again, snapped lines and masts cracked in half, and then we're all done with it, and then the beginning of a paragraph, "The schooner was a shambles." You don't say.
Yeah, please. You told us that cupboards and cubbies were flying off their hinges. If that doesn't make it a shambles, I don't know what does.
Oh, I was like, is it trying for a laugh here? Like, you know, we've been slogging through this prose of every paragraph describing things being ripped apart. So yeah, shambles implied and inferred by us. Thank you.
If I ever get to stage my own Macbeth, I'm gonna replace "'Twas a Rough Night" with the guy saying, "So that just happened."
Could it be any worse tonight?
We got this this good description. It was Garin who pulled Morag free, both their faces pale as sheets of newly pressed parchment. And I just thought, like, or maybe some newly printed flyers, perhaps?
Yeah. Well, hang on. Let me get out some of my parchment. Oh, no, never mind. This is a couple days old.
Oh. So
it's not going to do us any good. I don't know what color he's talking about.
It's impossible to imagine.
Yeah.
We get a Asperity watch. Hush, Morag, Thorn implored. "Please hush yourself, Drumheller. She spoke with a pinch of her normal asperity." So we're starting to parse the degrees of asperity here, which, you know, in a book as full of asperity as this one has been, I can understand.
Yeah, so if this were code, like the asperity has been turned on the whole time, we just haven't known that.
Right, yes.
So now it's been ramped down a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of like he, you know, we were joking. It's like, if everyone's talking with asperity, you don't need to keep telling us. And he finally took us up on that joke of ours.
Yeah, yeah. And we kind of get beat number, I don't know, 400 of him healing someone. But this is Morag again. So Morag, what we just saw where she got lashed by the thing is basically now she's just, you know, snapped in half and broken. She's a scarecrow. And he's going to heal her again. But that's kind of he doesn't. But that's on the table again when it just happened in the last chapter, which I thought was pretty lame.
Okay.
But then in the middle of that, here's the paragraph that I did not understand. It starts with, "The cry was a wonder." And this is just in the middle of something, but this is a sonic challenge for you. It boiled out of some deep and hidden place within that had never before been encountered, transcending the limits of flesh and even imagination, casting itself up and out as though by sheer volume it could cow the storm. So let me hear. "A cry that was a wonder that boiled out of some deep and hidden place that had never been encountered, transcending the limits of flesh and cow the storm." Wow.
Cowed? Are you feeling cowed?
That kind of made me think that you had, you know, someone was holding your wheelchair at the top of a set of stairs in a bad comedy, and then they accidentally went to look at a lady walk by and let you go.
And then they turn back and see Grandpa's wrecked thing on the bottom of the thing and go, "So that just happened."
Right. Mm. But then we learn that, so the Allura is on a leash Rin well, yeah. has her like tethered to him.
Yeah. So they've had a system, it appears, to have harnesses during this thing where there's, I guess, if you've ever gone zip lining, that's sort of how they, as you're like walking up these things so you don't fall off, they attach you to these like cable carabiners and like cables so you can, you know, if you fell, you would be held in. And that's what I interpreted this as.
But she specifically to him, I think.
Oh, so she just, he sort of strapped her to him?
Yeah, so that she doesn't run to the top of the deck and do the, you know, blow wind, crack your cheeks, you know, kind of thing again, yeah. I guess. So what I just thought of him is he's always, you know, within smelling distance. And, you know, being an otter man, I assume he has enhanced olfactory capacities. So his life is a living hell.
Yeah, no kidding. And then learning what we did about the Claremont half a Clucas in that leaked audio, the idea of walking a pig around on a leash becomes less of a wholesome, quirky pet and more of a
Indeed. Ooh.
This is, we have a, interesting thing about Morag. You were surprised to learn that she, was married to Shando, but we get this detail, as the water is sort of rising up and it sort of appears that they're going to lose the boat. Morag's head twisted fractionally from side to side, the pain of that acknowledgement far worse than any of her body. Her love for the boat was a tangible thing, as intense as any Thorn had known, colored with an undertone of true regret, because it was more than Morag's love for her husband. She would miss him, but miss her schooner more.
Wow. So you had that in mind when you did your Shando impression earlier.
Yes.
He's not cutting even enough of a figure to to win out the affections of her against this terrible boat, which has never been described as being very impressive.
Yeah, it was always sort of like the the Millennium Falcon, like it's a hunk of junk, but it's the best one, you know, it'll, you know, I trust it more than any new gleaming ship to get us where we need to be. But so she just, you know, he's a piece of garbage as far as she's concerned, and that's sort of her dying thought. Because Morag passes away, and the last thing Willow picks up from her is like, you know, tell my boat I love it, and you know, and your husband, he was okay, sure.
Yeah. So a lot of their marriage was like, Shando, get over there and fix it. You're hurting the boat.
Yes, dear.
So she dies. And then we get a he tries to like intervene in the storm one more time. He
punches the air.
Yes.
What is that? Did you get that?
He clenches one hand into a fist and punched down in the air before him, his face twisting darkly as emotions manifested themselves in concert with the blow. It was the hardest. Oh yeah, above them, the storm reacted as if it had been physically struck. It was the hardest thing he'd ever done. So he's sort of just doing a, I'm imagining this in like a fighting video game where you punch the ground and it delivers like an aftershock, you know, a sort of sonic boom to people that can do something. But if it was the hardest thing he's ever done, we've seen him pretty damn exhausted throughout this book. So I don't know want to know what level of exhaustion he's going to be after doing that.
Yeah, and he does it in a, I assume this is like a comic book kind of construction here. It was the hardest thing he'd ever done. Carriage return. It was magical. Carriage return. It didn't last.
Yeah.
So yeah, punching the air didn't last. Should he not have known this? He has been master of the weather for many, many years now.
True. Yes. I don't know. It's like, it's not like he just got a, you know how you get one of those boxes of chocolates on Valentine's Day and you sort of like pop one in. You're like, oh, it's one of those gross like cherry filled ones. It's not like he has just like a thing that says spells. He's like, let's see how this old air puncher works.
Right.
You know, and it's like, oh, it didn't work. Oh, too bad. Like he probably has some inkling about what he's doing is going to do.
Right. And let's throw this on the pile of physical things that happened to Willow.
Okay.
He felt a turn up the length of his back, as if someone had reached within to twist his spinal cord into a corkscrew. He tried to cry a warning, but the moment between thought and execution was too long. Doom was upon them all before the words were spoken. Also thought, he is the author who cries doom here. I mean, how many times has it been upon them? They've had their ass kicked 100 times over. But now it's really bad, guys. This is not good.
Yeah, the doom has been at 11. The smells have been at 11. The body horror has been at 11. But this is what we were talking about when we were talking about it getting cranked to 17, because a spell of dissolution is about to be cast.
God.
a purely physical assault, a savage attempt to reduce them all to their component atoms. And I guess he's able to protect them, but since Morag is dead, he's not able to protect her. So we get this description. Morag's flesh spiked outward until gaps begin to appear, not because the skin had been torn. It was like a piece of fabric expanded to the point where one could see between the constituent threads of even the finest weave. From Shando came a hoarse wail that mingled measures of grief and rage, but above all, the shame of utter helplessness at this desecration of his wife's body. And Thorn realized he didn't know that she was already dead. He thought he was witnessing her murder. So it seems like a good place to be like, relax, man. She didn't even love you as much as the boat, to sort of like ease this for him. But it keeps going. Exposed to view, Morag's internal organs became subject to attack. Blood sprayed them all, immune to the action of wind or wave, turning the cockpit into an abattoir as separate strands of muscle, tendon, ligament, and ultimately nerves were torn from her. Thorn watched them braided into a foul rope, a barbed strand for every life aboard, and then the whip used to lash him across the face and body. Willow! Kids? Huh? You picking up on this?
Oh, also,
incredible.
Kids, the bastard had a final card to play as Morag's skin popped back together before him, a dangling pennant of flesh until air puffed it full as life and gave it a coarse form of animation. She took the whip made of herself, Willow, in one hand, beckoned him with the other in a crude parody of sexual invitation, lips stretching into a smile that Morag never made, lids opening to reveal shadow where eyes and soul had been. Willow.
Mommy! Oh, so much to parse there.
Crude sexual, a parody of a crude sexual, what is the exact invitation?
Come hither? Yeah.
Parody
so that's
of sexual.
That's not really touched upon. She's got a cat o' nine tails made of her own nerves and tendons and ligaments. And I don't know where the sexual invitation comes into it. Like, she's like, you know, come here and I'll chain you up and lash you. Like,
I guess so. But you know what? You know what we're getting dangerously close to here. She's a skin bag. She's an inflatable here. She's a lunar.
That's very true. She's gotten her whip is a hell of a rig.
Exactly, because it's her skin, and he puffs air into it.
Yes.
So
wow.
It's not her body. It's her body is the whip. So yeah, she's doing the full hell of a rig.
Well, so the guy who told the guy, hey, like, you know, I'd really like to be turned on by your inflatable cow costume, but knowing that there's a guy in it just makes it impossible. If you could just tell people it's a woman in there, I think you'd get a lot more subs. This could be what this guy's been looking for. A salty broad carrying a whip made of herself, inflating herself.
I would just like to just stop at this point. And what physical description did you have of Morag, the person who's going, you know, basically, you know, F me with a marlin spike and stuff like that? Like, what did you, what were you picturing her as?
At this moment?
Yeah, I mean, just as you were reading the book, I'll give you mine. I kind of pictured Napoleon Dynamite's aunt, right, that they lived with. Or is it grandma or whatever?
I don't remember.
It was like a tough old broad who kind of swore at him, and, you know, she was always like a cigarette dangling out of one corner of her mouth, and kind of walked to the little kind of little stumble, rumble walk, and that's what I pictured. So the sexual come on was like, oh,
yeah. Right, yeah. Going to take a bit more than that. I sort of like had like, you know, one of those bodies exhibits too of all the, you know, once her skin was stripped away and that was what it was. And then she made a rope or a whip out of one of those guys.
Here. I just meant as she was, you know, throughout the book. Yeah. Here she's probably looking like Iggy Pop or, like you say, the bodies exhibit, which I now think are pretty much identical.
Right, yes, yeah. It's pretty much just a chunk of sinew.
Yes. So they wash ashore.
Yeah.
And then, so Shando thinks that that Willow killed her. So he confronts her.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So yeah, she like, I guess he like fooled her. He knocked her over, I think, and she sunk, right? Like,
That's because she was a zombie. Yes, so he's okay. Thinking that she was alive, and he did it to stop the evil spell.
Yeah.
Of the deceiver.
Got it.
So he is blameless in this, obviously. But Shando thinks that he's responsible. So he gets him down on the ground, and he's doing the. The Christmas Story, reckon, and Willow goes Bugs Bunny and begins to burrow under the sand. So is there literally anything he can't do?
Yeah,
given moment.
He takes his floor becoming skills and just becomes sand for a moment.
And he digs his way and takes a wrong turn at Albuquerque, I guess.
Yeah, he runs into a palm tree and a coconut falls on his head and he...
Right.
Emerges. So he sort of makes peace with Shando, I guess. They start to sort of like plan out what they're going to do. I think they're pretty much on the shores of Angwin because they were observing the palace, frozen and everything. But they say, he says, where do we go from here? And Thorne says, only way we can, north beyond the end of the peninsula. Same basic plan as before, only a different direction. If they have had a plan at any given moment of the story, that would be news to me.
we have not been privy to it. I'm glad to learn they have one. Maybe it will be revealed to us at some point.
But it involves them taking a trek through a sacred forest, first growth forest, Shando, that dates back to when the land was born, concentrated to Cherlindria. I don't think the deceiver can touch us here. So that's convenient. They just happen to wash up at a base when you're playing hide and go seek as a kid, and you get to the base that the deceiver can't touch you on.
Right. But this place becomes, I was never clear on whether, is this like a lovely untouched place, but they also seem to think that it's very, very terrifying and that they shouldn't be here. They're very on their guard. So it's somehow it's both at once, and I didn't understand that at all.
Yeah, we get a honest to God one of these in the wild. It's the trees themselves, the oldest of old growth. They're concentrated to Cherlindria, said. So story tells they have been first planted by her own hands. And then Garin says, too darn quiet, if you ask me.
Oh, God.
So a little too quiet. But right before that, we got he keeps coming, even after we played his tapes, the contrast between Alora and Corey. As outlaid by Clucas, Alora progressed in much the same manner as a cow or a sheep. When nudged along her way, she went. So he's just doing he's going through old MacDonald and just saying every single one of those is her.
Will she ever? Is there ever going to be a point where she's described as, tripping lightly like a fawn, or will we be sticking to the ruminants and the split-hoofed animals mostly?
Yeah. I think, the more oaf-like animals, the beasts of burden.
Right.
But then you get Corey. So this is, you might think, he's going to draw a positive comparison. Not really. Corey was nothing but questions. What is this? Where did this come from? Bludgeoning him with a barrage as infuriating as it was genuine, to the point where he would as cheerfully throttle her for enthusiasm as he would Alora for her equally total lack of it. Just, is there anyone, are there any ladies in this story that you're okay with, my author? This is just really starting to seem like there might be something below the surface here.
I would be the greatest thing in the world if we found out that Sean Penn was listening to this particular podcast because he was really loved the description of women, and then he wrote in some fanfic for us, and it was the best stuff we ever heard.
Yeah, if we were sort of unstuck in time, and this particular episode inspired Bob Honey.
We also get another thing that adds to my confusion about Taximanian.
Oh, sure.
He should be the one, like, wrapping people in his belly fur, tucking both deeply into his chest and belly fur, combining the mass of the dune plus his own body to blunt the wind. So,
wow.
How big is he and how loose is his skin? Is he a Shar-Pei otter? And then he kind of pulls his belly fur out and wraps people around it.
Yeah, maybe that's, you know, when you do the equivalent of a beer belly for a win or a wern.
So, again, what the hell is this creature?
I don't know. You know, but yeah, so like imagine you're like, you know, you're at a football game and you're sort of like, oh, man, I wish I had like worn a warmer coat. This is sort of getting kind of rough. And he just pulls out a massive blanket of belly fur and sort of offers it to you. And you're like, no, I'm no, yeah. I'll just rub my hands together. That just. Oh.
So they're going through this either magical or demonic forest. Unsure, unclear. It's either.
Well, it's been consecrated to Chirlindria, who is
bad. I don't know. And he, we now get it. We drill down and circle back on Mage Sight.
Yeah.
So let's get the rules down here. Mage Sight, he told Garen when they moved apart again, better vision than a cat in anything less than absolute dark, more suitable than a torch. I'll offer the same to the rest, so will each be on equal footing. That's their typo.
Yes.
Damn, Garen responded in wonderment. Damn it, boy. Sorry, I added that. When this fades, it's be like going mostly blind. I'm sorry for that because it will fade. The change is temporary, and there's a limit to how often I can re-energize it. The body has a finite capacity. It can be taxed only so hard before it begins to break down. Superhuman strength will eventually burn out the muscles or shatter the bones. Enhanced sight will make you blind.
Yeah.
You know what? Just skip the mage sight. Yeah, my eyes are adjusting.
I'm walking through the darkness. Yes. I'm
starting to get that night vision, you know, where the visual purple coats the back of your retina, and I'll be fine. So,
yeah, that's like where you ask a coworker if it's like, hey, like I, you know, car's in the shop. I was wondering if you might be able to just take me home after work. And they're like, oh, well, like I would love to, but the thing is, you know, like Cheryl's got tap lessons tonight, and you know I probably could make it. It just would be a little tight, and like you live off exit 13, and there's always much more traffic going south on that exit. So, and you're like, I don't need a ride. I'll find another one. I should have asked someone else from the first place.
Or can I borrow your car? And like, oh, sure, yeah. A couple things about it. You know, if you press the gas down twice, like, don't do that. That'll, like, blow out this hose.
I wasn't going to do that. I know how to drive a car.
It's like, I just, look, if there's a lot of rules to this, I'm just going to take a pass.
And I just like the reaction of being, you know, so I give you a sensory experience unlike anything you've ever experienced before. Literal magic. You've seen things that you did not know existed. Your response? Damn. Okay, I thought my godlike powers might trigger a, you know, just a bit more eloquent of response, Garen, but very well.
Oh, he's doing a full Men in Black, like getting the little gun that blows him up against the wall.
Yeah.
Damn.
But yeah, so they not the only magic we're going to see. This is what I was looking for earlier. Thorn casts a small dismissal.
Mm-hmm.
A variant of a minor glamour to keep the people from getting tired, because they're going to be doing, you know, walking through the night, I guess. But it says Thorn's problem was that he was starting from a far lesser plateau, well into reserves of strength and spirits the others had only begun to tap. His senses were as acute as ever, but the orbits of his eyes burned with strain, his joints cast off a constant ache, and he moved with the gingerly grace of an ancient. So you're saying he's tired.
He's
wow.
tired then. Yeah. Fatigue curled in about the muscles of his legs, the joints of his hips like tendrils of a fog bank.
A little bit later,
a weary smile,
because the muscles of his face felt overburdened as though he were reshaping soft lead. And it was a measure of his profound fatigue that not only was he beyond an emotional response to the memories of his lost companions, but also that he didn't notice. We get it.
Is he tired? You don't say. Yeah.
But it's also applying. It says he's starting from a position that the others are not at. Like, he's tapped more into his reserves. Like, they all just survived the same, like, exhausting ordeal and swam to shore and haven't eaten and they've swallowed salt water. Like, I think the others might be insulted if he was like, no, listen, guys, I'm way down here. Like, I know you guys think you're tired and exhausted and your wife just died, but no, I'm yeah, I'm right. at, like, a -3 here.
Right. So then there's just long, I don't have a lot of notes left for this because there's just long discussions of them walking slowly through these woods.
Yeah, no, I don't have too many, but there are, there's one or two more things we should touch on.
Well, my last one, if you want to get to it, it's another description of Alora. Do you want to save that to the end?
I have the way the chapter ends, but then everything else before that is just descriptions of Alora.
Yes.
I have three.
With a start, he recovered wits and balance to find Alora Dannon standing before him. Let's see. Let's take a guess. Yeah. Is she okay.
Radiant in her resplendence? Yes.
Is she standing looking confident?
Yeah.
Smiling down on him with a
beneficence
he hadn't seen before?
Yeah, her hair bouncy and full of life.
He'd never noticed the symmetry of that lovely face, the delicate features, the high cheekbones, a flush to them that gave her an aspect of youth that she was well earned by her inner character. No, it's not. It is a doughy waif with a haunted aspect to her eyes that was starkly at odds with the well-fed flesh that encased it.
It's amazing. I hope they never stop.
It is incredible.
How does a doughy waif scan? I thought a waif was like, a 90s sort of Kate Moss type of model, right?
I thought that's physically what it meant as well. A waif being a, you know, sort of an undernourished thing.
But so she's a chubby... Chubby yet stick-like possible eating disorder.
I guess maybe he just went to the thesaurus and like, what are unflattering terms for?
Right.
I don't care if they contradict one another.
I just imagined Axl Rose saying, what's so doughy about waifs anyway?
I don't know that reference, but
the way he makes you think at the end of the song Civil War, where he says, what's so civil about wars anyway?
Oh, yeah. I think you mentioned that before. Wow. It does make you think, doesn't it?
He does not end. He goes on. And her physical appearance translates, I guess, to just even what she's wearing. Because it says she had no notion of how her clothes were meant to be worn.
Yes.
Thorin had the sense from her that she blanked while being dressed, standing before her maids nearly naked and emerging properly and exquisitely outfitted without the slightest clue as to how it was managed. Still, she'd tried to arrange them as best she could. Not terribly successful from the perspective of either comfort or aesthetics.
So she tied a skirt around her arm.
Yeah, she shoved her pant leg into her mouth and is just going, a
pair of underpants over one shoulder, kind of clumsily crammed through both leg holes.
Yeah, she's got a bag of wavy Lay's chips that she's wearing as a sleeve. She punched a hand through the bottom of it, and so now that's her like gauntlet.
Every bit of clothing, of course, sort of crunchy with dried vomit, and of course, feces as well. But that
obviously
goes without saying.
Yes. Doesn't know how to wipe. So, and then to top it all off, it evidently her voice now, she talks like Elizabeth Holmes from the Blood Company.
Oh yeah,
says her voice was broken with a huskiness reminiscent of Shando. And then, so I'm going to turn it on you. I want a vocal challenge from you. Look at me, she cried, her tone disconcertingly as deep as his. I'm cursed. The world's cursed. I never meant for anything bad to happen. I was just so scared. So, yeah, she's doing the go ahead.
Okay, I think I got it.
Look at me. I'm cursed. The world's cursed. I never meant for anything bad to happen. I was just so scared.
That sounds like when they've tried to clone Kermit the Frog, and like the first one, they're like, "No, it's an abomination. We've got to kill it." And he's like, "Piggy, love me, Piggy." God. So, just this has been a slog, and there hasn't been enough of it. But his descriptions of her have really just come full circle to being hilarious.
There's not much time to redeem her either. I mean, there's 94 pages, but we're not going to get page after page of the lyrical descriptions of her, I assume.
Yeah, I mean
the best. What is she going to get? Maybe thrown into a stall and hosed off so she looks a little bit better. I don't think she's going to transform.
Yeah, or she's going to get Apollo Creed's going to show up and being like, Alora, you look like shit. Then he's going to take her to a mountain and just sort of like do like a intensive beauty makeover type of thing. A makeup tutorials and doing crunches and stuff. So
yeah, it's going to have to be that because it can't be taking off glasses and shaking hair down. And I never noticed how radiant you were.
Oh, if we get one of those, it would be one. It would. Again, not going to redeem the whole thing, but it would make me very happy if he tried to swing one of those in the final pages.
It's like a zip and like a, flesh suit comes off. Ha ha, I was trim all along.
Really? Well, how did you squint your face up into a pig-like visage? Never mind that. We've got a war to win.
Scotch tape. I'm doing the funny scotch tape faces.
Right. Little Vaseline on the teeth. There we go.
Yeah.
The way that this chapter ends is a reappearance of some beloved characters. She says, "What do you know, Peck?" She made the last word as foul as any obscenity he'd heard, so harsh in speech and intent that he actually flinched, which I thought it was funny that, like, after the past, what happened in the past 3 hours, being sexually come on to by a woman holding a whip made out of her own entrails, that maybe being called Peck might not cut so deep, but what do
yeah,
I know?
Especially, and I was looking at that point, what's her name? Morag had strings of obscenities. She basically right. spoke in that language like all the time. So.
She was like the girl on The Exorcist to him.
So now he's like, my delicate ears.
But then here we go. We hear Oathbreaker, cried Rule from his perch on Bastion's shoulders. Bastion is an eagle. Betrayer, this one from Frangine, riding Anil. Demon, they cried together, even more of a curse than Alora's peck had been. A word meant to hurt worse than any weapon. It ends with the brownies riding the eagles, who had been long forgotten, but they're soaring towards him, and Willow puts up his hands to protect his faith from the talons of the eagles that are now besieging them.
So there are four creatures who see him as a demon, but no others.
Right, yes.
Because I assume you the eagles are not going to take these idiots' word for it.
Right, like, no, yeah, they
he's
must.
He's a demon. No, he looks fine to me. Like, I'm That's not going
Thorn,
to plunge
man. Relax.
My talon into him. Yes.
Yeah. they are, for whatever reason, they are still perceiving the bit of the demon that the demon imparted to him when he requested his assistance. And will we understand that? I do not know. Will it be something he can easily dismiss with a minor glamour or a, what was the last one?
A dissembler? No, he's got, outsight,
Insight, mage, small dismissal.
Small dismissal.
So yes. Yeah, maybe you've got a small demon problem. You dismiss it with a small dismissal.
Mm-hmm. You could punch the air. I don't know. does something? Yeah, he could send them away with an air punch.
He's going to pull that. Yeah, that's what Judd Nelson was trying to do at the end of The Breakfast Club. There was two brownies. This is a fan theory, who had been bothering him the whole time they were in detention, and he was trying to dismiss them with that punch.
So there you go. And all I can say about those two chapters is, man, poleaxe me with a sledgehammer, huh? That was some tough reading.
As long as you're making a sneer that's a crude parody of Sexual Invitation while you extend that invitation.
with a whip of my own flesh and nerves.
Willow.
Yes.
Well, we've got some people are reading this, so they do have some thoughts they wanted to weigh in. So let's do some listener emails.
We're going to the party. We ain't going to the game. We ain't going to the disco. Ain't gonna cruise out, man. Stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
Shocked that they're still reading, but glad. Shocked in a good way.
Yeah, we get some good stuff from people, so I appreciate them all. A lot of them are Patreon supporters, which you can join in on by patreon.com/372pages. Running a meme contest on there now, where some of the memes have started being about me, which I gotta say is a...
Was it mistitling the episode? Or
yeah, that, you know, mispronouncing garbage, you know, there's a name that will come up later in one of these emails, so we don't need to get to it, but interesting way to try to win the $20 is all I've got to say.
no comments on my Magus blunder, which, you know, pretty big blunder.
Maybe we'll get some niece Caitlin memes after this one. But yeah, so join that. It's really fun. We're getting near 500 supporters, which is really cool. And I just wanted to plug, if I can, doing a show at San Francisco Sketch Fest on Saturday, January 18th, with Josh Frulinger. We're doing the Internet Read Aloud. So if you want to hear me read more things aloud, you can come and see that. I'm going to be discussing some very interesting information I found on the backstory of Woodsy Owl.
Oh, I wish I could be there. I'm not going to be able to make it. Yeah, which theater are you at? And
so it's called Piano Fight. It's a smaller theater than the show we usually do our Riff Trax Sketch Fest events out. So go get your tickets. Bill Corbett from Riff Trax is going to be there, as well as a couple other very funny people from LA that Josh Frulinger is bringing up. It should be a really fun show. We did it once like 5 years ago, and he's kept it going in LA. So do come see us. I would love to say hi if I see any cow rig shirts. I might make a slideshow of the cow rig too, since that's very internety.
Yeah, very much so. That I know that venue. It's a good one.
Oh, good.
Have you seen it before?
No, I've never. I've got my terrible Airbnb I'm staying in, because when you do a 90-person Sketchfest show, you don't get the put up in a hotel and flown out there like you do when you do a Riff Trax Live.
Sure.
So it's right near there, so I hope it's in a good part of town.
It is. It is. It's right near everything there. It's not far away.
Yeah, so if you come out to see that, say hi. I would love to talk pretty much any other book besides this one. But our first email is from Patrick. He says, turns out Chris Claremont's got a formula for how complicated his plots became. The Claremont coefficient. This is a known thing. If the number of plot points introduced in a comics issue divided by the number of plot points resolved in the same issue is over 1, then you've got a Claremont coefficient. It's also known as a kudzu plot. And so this has its own TV tropes page. Claremont coefficient redirects to kudzu plot. And then
really?
He also, so I guess that's just if you keep introducing things and not resolving them, like Lost, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Claremont so kudzu referring to the overgrowing plant that tangles.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. And then he says, apparently also his dialogue was so signature, it was called Claremont Ease. Check out this panel set by legendary artist Bill Sienkiewicz, had to draw for a whopping 317 words. As he points out that the rule of thumb is in a comics is 28 words per panel. And he points out, he links to these things, which are truly hilarious to read. It is a comic in the loosest sense, in that it is a block of text with like some tiny drawings wedged in around it. So evidently his comics are sometimes as hard to read as his Willow novelizations.
Why is this guy continually hired?
Revered?
Then?
I have no idea. Because that's the one thing you heard is like, you know, it's like, oh well, he just must be a great comic writer, and you know, this is one panel, but it looks like utter garbage. So,
wow, I assume is that up at Patreon?
I will put it up there. Yeah.
Okay. Great.
This is by Blake. He says, this brings me to the teeth clacking, which you guys have identified as being from Val Kilmer's Iceman character in Top Gun. My alternate take is that it's not Iceman at all, but Chatterer, a demon from Hellraiser, who I guess is chattering their teeth. He included a GIF. He says, what's my support for this? It's only that Claremont lifts the entire climax of Hellraiser for the scene when Morag dies. And he links to the one of the infinite number of fish hooks, pulling her flesh out, internal organs being explained. And he links to the final scene of Hellraiser, which I'd never seen, but it was ridiculous. It was a sort of thing that, like, I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies growing up. And you look at this and it's like, good Lord, this is why. Like,
yeah, that actually came to mind, the fish hooks thing. I didn't make a note of it because it had been so long since I'd seen it. And, but yeah, that was his, the Hellraiser thing was lots of bodies being, you know, ripped into thousands of pieces and gore being splashed everywhere, I think.
Truly, you know, revolting and disturbing to see that. So thank you for haunting my nightmares with that, Blake. We get this. Theodore says, Morag's flayed, reanimated skin doing a come hither beckon at the thorn formerly known as Willow was exceptionally unpleasant. I don't know if either Claremont or Lucas have grandchildren, but that was a grandpa no moment, to put Charles Harris to shame. Frangine and Rule escaping the raging inferno that destroyed Angwin was sadly not the worst thing to happen in this book. this is one from Veronica. Veronica says, I had to laugh at the recent Vizards discussion, as well as Minor Glamours, because amazingly enough, they both just so happen to be in scripts I just drew. I'm a comic book artist and listen to the pod while drawing. Currently, I'm working on Sabrina the Teenage Witch for Archie Comics and Blackwood for Dark Horse Comics. In the script for Sabrina, the writer called for her to cast a little glamour on her hair so that it turns blonde and not call attention to it. And then in the script for Blackwood, there is a funny exchange about if one should ever use the term wizards. Because I guess wizard has some sort of... They are self-aware about using it because it's like a 16th century term for masks or something like that. And believe it or not, in the panel discussing wizards, there is a character named Ogden.
Oh my God.
So we've come full circle.
How deep
here.
Does it go?
So Veronica gave me permission to post those panels on social media. So I will post those so everyone can look at those and check out her Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Blackwood comics, because they are clearly going to be far better to read than what we're reading here.
They is, have a she, normal amount of is she going text to have per... to draw Sabrina making her body into a flesh whip and then her skin bag inflating? And
I think when Archie Comics decides to burn that franchise to the ground, that is probably how it will go out.
I look forward to it.
And this is another email that says, this is from a guy named Mike Nelson. I was binging on he might be the deceiver.
Well, he is. You're fooling everyone.
I was binging on Riff Tracks on Amazon Prime over the holidays, and I was wondering if you have riffed a movie that you hated more than this book. At least something as bad as Monos is only 90 minutes, and the cinematic works of James Wynn are so bad they're hilarious. This book is just never-ending violence, boredom, misogyny, and misery, and I am glad when I finished that I tossed my copy in the recycle can so no one can accidentally read my copy in the future. So that's a good question.
Transformers comes to mind.
Oh, sure.
Because it's so long and so loud and so confusing and so, there's some overlap there. But I don't, it's synonymous. I wouldn't say I hated it more than this book.
Yeah, Transformers had that effect of doing like the Memorex logo of sort of blowing you back in your chair with its onslaught. But it also had the negative, for me, a very negative aspect is that people were willing to defend it.
You know,
people really be like, listen, man, all you have to do is turn off your brain and watch two robots punch each other. It's not supposed to be high art. And it's like, it just sets my teeth on edge to when people make that argument.
Yes.
Like,
because
but it really sucks.
Yeah. We're
I don't
well
need a brain
aware
to...
of stuff like that. That is entertainment that is meant to be disposable, but is actually good. So I'm aware of the genre. This is just not it.
Yeah. But I think that the time commitment for any of those is certainly less than we've spent on this book.
Yeah.
Those were our emails, and then we have some dumb sentences.
A sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital letter is big, big, big.
I promised to let a little more go, so I will this time.
Or an exclamation, or a question mark. A sentence always ends with a period, or an exclamation, or a question mark. So,
my dog is great.
Is a sentence. The M is a capital. Yeah, that's right.
My dog is great.
I just want to get to the next sentence, and then we'll do this.
Okay. That's right. And
do you like bugs?
Is a sentence.
Okay. All right. I'm worried if you let it keep playing too long, it's going to go into like the protocols of the elders of Zion are a must read for every child.
Also, there is a monster.
Is a sentence. The T is a capital. Yeah, it's big.
There is a monster!
Man.
Has a strong feeling, so therefore it ends with an exclamation mark.
What's the next one? Oh, break.
Wow. Okay, settle down. You can play the guitar.
Yeah. all the kids going, yeah, guitar break. Woo.
Hey, you know, he's got 1 million views. How many do you have?
That's true. Makes more money than me, man.
Well, we do have many dumb sentences. I don't know if many of them are my dog has bugs or whatever he was saying, but we do have many good dumb sentences. We will start with Jen's. The most striking image to come to him as they fell was the utter lack of sound. They say, I don't know where to start with this one. A couple times prior in the book, the most striking thing to Thorne is the absence of something, such as the wasteland that was somehow emptier than he could have ever have imagined. But most importantly, lack of sound was his most striking image? What? So that is as their boat is doing the Wile E. Coyote thing. So,
That one missed me. That's that is a perfect dumb sentence.
This one is from Heather. This is the Shatlardian touch. How bad, Thorne asked her, is it? She just says, why would you split up a four-word sentence? We actually had a guy on Twitter link to us to a like grammar site that said, hey, this thing that you guys are talking about, it's okay to do that.
What?
And like, you know, it was a site that had a lot of comments. So I don't think it was just some idiots, but it wasn't like he was linking to, you know, Strunk and White. But it's like, no, man, like everyone agreed that this sucked and made things harder to read. And like, sure, maybe if something's right, like, you know, ain't a word and neither is irregardless, but we know what they mean when people use them. So they're conveying information. Like, so this is making it harder to receive the information.
What is the possible defense of that? Like, no one's saying that it's grammatically incorrect. So, okay, you win, but it's terrible.
Right.
I mean, isn't that enough? What do you mean this is okay?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't break a rule, it's okay?
Sure,
it's like that, the famous, what is, you know, you're not supposed to leave a, what is it, an infinitive at the end of a sentence? This is something up with which I shall not put is the famous example of, come on, man.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's correct, but that's not a readable sentence.
Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, maybe things change. So, like, you never feel good about turning the fire hose of, hey, check out this guy, you know, tell him that he's wrong on people. But, you know, in this case, I didn't mind.
Okay, good.
This is from Elena. Hatches and portholes gave way under the tremendous impact, water bursting into the cabin with the force of fire hoses, solid wood visibly flexing like sheets of tin so that even cubbies thought stoutly secured were sent flying. And she pointed out a thing earlier, because when I tried it out, the cupboards were getting broken. The entire ship is breaking apart around them, but apparently the cubbies falling over is the last straw. Also, add high-pressure fire hoses to things that exist in the Willowverse.
Right. The cubbies thing made me think a little bit of setting up a room. Like,
yes,
the cubbies are disturbed. That's bad news.
I think the cubbies, you glorious insane bitch, the cubbies is one of the best lines from setting up a room. What did I have? Oh, I posted an image yesterday. I posted me and you. We made a video of the making of setting up a room,
a
recreation of how we discovered it. I posted that on Instagram. I'll post that as well. I'm pointing a gun at you as you're trying to cut the film.
Oh, that's right.
This is from Harris. Unbidden, the demon child sprang to the stern to release the anchor the only way she knew how, her booted foot lashing out against the broken transom before Shando or any of the others were even aware she'd moved. He said, so she kicked it. But what I took away from that was the resurgence of booted foot, which again was a Shatlart trademark. I didn't know if anyone else had noticed it, but someone else wrote me an email about it, so I figured it was worth bringing it up.
Right. Yeah, I'd forgotten that. That's booted foot, yes.
This one is from Andrew. The cove was surprisingly calm, thanks mostly to a curving tail of earth and rocks that acted as a breakwater, the storm manifesting itself through the roiling thunder of the surf with an occasional splash of spray over the top for emphasis. And he said, besides the sentence defining what a cove is for us, the fact that the storm gives us an occasional splash of spray over the top for emphasis makes the storm sound like it is throwing a little fit. Or maybe it's just the bile rising in its throat. This one's from Janelle. The deck was mostly awash, the schooner reduced to a few handspans worth of freeboard that no amount of work on the pumps would improve. And she just said, I know these are English words, but I have no idea what this means. Boat wrecked?
I think that is what it's intended to convey. And I wanted to yell Freeboard the next time a band was doing an encore. This next one is from Lucas. He thought of Corey like a vampire or were. And he said, ignoring for the moment of the implied existence of vampires and werewolves in the Willowverse. Hey, there's fire hoses, man. They could be there. He said, abbreviating werewolf to were makes no sense. Were is an old English word meaning man. I never thought about that, but that makes sense. But so unless he thought of her as a man, this is just Klukas being needlessly fancy with the language. In case you were wondering, and I certainly was, I know this because when Sonic Unleashed came out, that is a Sonic the Hedgehog video game, it had the titular character turned into a werehog, and smug folks on the internet made this exact same point.
Oh, that it was man-hog?
Well, yeah, so Sonic the Hedgehog is not a man. So I guess if when he was turning into the, you know, I assume he turned into a hog by the light of a full moon. So if he was a werehog, it's that, you know, people will. Yeah. That's, I mean, that's hilarious. I never really thought about werewolf, the entomology. But so, yeah, just saying were doesn't really get the point across.
Right.
This one's from Shane, Patreon supporter. Shando loomed, managing to hold himself erect despite the logy, wild-ass motion of the ship. So this is like another, you know, Will Smith Men in Black type of thing, being like, you know, damn, Tommy Lee, you've got some wild-ass shit back here.
Yeah, I noted that too. I didn't write it down as my dumb sentence, but very out of place.
Is it just talking about like trying to tame a wild donkey? Like it's bucking like a bronco?
I mean, it read like a bro wrote that sentence. Ghost wrote the sentence.
Yeah, Logie, I didn't even bother to look up.
That just is tired. The L-O-G-Y, right?
Yeah.
Just tired, yeah.
Okay, so I've got my own. I had that as one of my picks, but this was another good one. He's sort of inhabiting the storm, but then it says, with a start, he found himself back in himself.
Oh, boy. Yes. I had keyed on the with a start, but couldn't remember whether we had beaten that horse too much. But a lot of starts in all of our books. People waking with starts or yep. Doing stuff with starts.
Well, yeah. As long as they keep doing it in movies, they're going to keep putting it in books, I suppose.
I prefer to picture it as Martin Short doing it. He's big on those, you know, doing the full vaudevillian, like someone walks up behind him and he acts like he's just been scared out of his wits. Those kind of comic starts, like, ah, what do you, ah. So that's what I prefer to picture them as.
What do you got?
I kind of burned mine, but it's the worse than being pole-axed by a sledgehammer.
Sure. Yep. So, that makes sense.
Yeah. I burned it for entertainment value early on.
Well, we need a lot of that.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think that takes us through to the end. I think we're going to read up to page 404 next time. That's. I mean, right? We don't want to read 96 pages of this and talk about it for 4 hours.
Well,
what do you think?
Unless we want to half read it and skip and get this over with. I fear losing people. I mean,
I know I do too.
I really do. I mean, look at all the comments of the guy saying it's the worst thing he's ever read and he threw it away.
There's someone who's like, yeah, you know, no one would forgive you if you bailed on this. Many of us have already. We can. It'll take a little longer to read it, so we can take a little longer in between the episode, but
yeah, let's do it.
Let's yeah.
put it to bed. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, Caitlin's not doing anything. She'll be fine.
All right. yeah, let's finish the damn book.
All right. There it is, folks. You heard it live. Your pain is almost over. Ours is just beginning, but...
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. Oh, man. The sun just came out.
I wonder... maybe there'll be so many descriptions of Alora's pigginess that this will be an utter delight. I don't know.
One can only hope.
It's just page after page.
I went back before when I found that dark web. I just wanted to make sure the pig thing was not something we'd been over-exaggerating. They called her a pig once. but, you know, whatever.
Right now I'm picturing her as... like Courtney Love at her worst, stumbling out of a club at 4 a.m. That's yes. what I picture Alora is.
Right, yeah, mascara smeared, even though it doesn't exist in this world.
Somehow wearing a tiara that's like tilted on the head and one glove on, but the other ripped off or something. Yeah. All right, finish the book.
Finish the book.
There it is. Wow. What a slog. I mean, what a delight this has been. And we will see you next time. This is 372 pages. We'll never get back.
Give my best to Caitlin, though. Really.
I will. Yeah.